What we're talking about is late night and early morning low clouds. With a chance of fall, chance of showers into the afternoon, with a variable high cloudiness and gusty winds. Gusty winds at times around that corner of Sunset and Alvarado. Yeah, I know, things are tough all over. When the thunderstorms start increasing over the southeast and south central portions of my apartment, I get upset.
Great to have you with me here today, Daryl Bradford Smith, your host and radio disc jockey here, as it were. We listen to some music here on this show. I'm hoping to get a couple of new tunes played for you pretty soon. A little tough to get that stuff all redesigned back into the program, so you can look out for that. We're going to do some other stuff with maybe Thelonious Monk, and we'll put in some Michelle Petrucciani, and even some Patti LaBelle. I mean, I love Patti LaBelle. Chris, you like Patti LaBelle?
Voulez-vous coucher avec moi, c'est ça?
Yes, that is her most famous song, but certainly not her best work.
No.
No. She's probably
she's a great stylist.
She's got the best pipes in singing, I think.
She's certainly one of them, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I love her, and she just got some great songs out there. Anyway, we've been doing this stuff now for months and months, and of course, the people that listen to the French Connection are coming to expect us to move the ball forward at every show. And I got to tell you, there's so much out there, so much information. One of the things that we didn't start again, I want to bring you back over to it, was the Myron Fagan issue. And what are some of the items that you found were not salient and not necessarily well-researched on his part?
Oh, again, the Elbert Pipe letter, Protocols of Zion. There was one other issue that escapes me at the moment. If I can digress, I would say that the things that he brought out that were important and truthful, I think much of his information about Adam Weishaupt was accurate. But I think Fagan... When I hear the name Fagan, I think of Oliver Twist, and there was a Jewish character named Fagan and Oliver Twist who exploited children
yes.
by turning them to thieves. So I suspect it's a Jewish name. And that
it is. He's called the Dirty Jew in that book.
Oh, that's terrible.
Dickens actually refers to him as that.
Yeah. I think that he wanted to shift the focus on communism and not Zionism per se or Judaism, and that's why he was focusing in on the Illuminati. And I think I don't know if he missed it or he deliberately somewhat obfuscated the issue by focusing in on the Illuminati and its relationship to communism. It may just be that he was trying to give a cogent history of the development of communism, but he left a lot out, and I think that he intentionally or unintentionally misrepresented the motivations of the players.
Okay. Oh, well, because here's the interesting thing. Some of the things he says and Ben Friedman say also correspond pretty well with the speech that Samuel Untermyer gave in 1933 upon his return from a meeting in Europe about what their plans were to destroy the German economy and make them pay for their resistance to the Zionist threat. And as a result of that, of course, we all know that much of the lead up to World War II was brought to the German people based upon that lie.
Well, I would say that's a bit of a simplification of what was going on. Hitler had been an outspoken anti-Semite and a proud anti-Semite, and the Jewish community had a right to react to the fact that he had been elected as Chancellor of Germany.
Okay.
And as Untermyer pointed out, with the money of Jewish bankers, he would never have been able to accomplish it without that money. And Eustace Mullins pointed out another very historically significant idea. When the Nazis used to march, there used to be Zionists who would march behind them with signs that said, Hinaus mit uns, which means throw us out, toss us out. So it was a Zionist organization and conspiracy the whole way through, even before the Nazi Party was founded.
And probably compartmentalized so that many of the perpetrators were not aware that they were being manipulated.
Well, they had societies to manipulate Germans into becoming racists so that they would no longer marry Jews. The motivation behind the whole thing was to prevent the assimilation of German Jews into German society. The Zionists were very racist, and they thought that the Jewish race was disappearing through assimilation, and that the only means to prevent it would be to reinstitute the ghetto system that had existed through medieval Europe, which they saw as a good thing because it kept Jews segregated from Gentiles and preserved the Jewish race. And people like Albert Einstein and many other prominent Jewish Zionists came out and said that anti-Semitism is a wonderful thing. It's correct in all its tenets. We should embrace it. We should not participate in German society, and the Jews should be tossed out of Germany and sent to Palestine. And I'm sure it was the Zionists who created the Thule Gesellschaft, the Thule Society, which promoted Arianism, which was an idea from Gabino, the idea that we have German folk and a German land, the fatherland, and they called it Blut und Boden. And that meant that the German people had a right to the German land. And they promoted that idea so that they could then say, we are a foreign nation within Germany, and you should throw us out and send us to Palestine, because we too have a right to Blut und Boden. We are a German, we are a Jewish race, and we deserve a Jewish land so that we can live and create a Jewish culture.
Now, these were Ashkenazis, weren't they?
Yes, they were Eastern European Jews. German people hated them.
They had never been, ever stepped one foot, not them or their family members, ever been to the Holy Land.
Well, I think that's an unsettled question. They certainly had Khazar blood. Whether they had Judean blood or not is a separate issue. But the Judean blood is the same as Palestinian Arab blood. So that in itself is a racist attitude. This exactly the same racist attitude that they built into Nazism, that they have a right to this land because of their blood. In modern society, that's greatly frowned upon, and how they get away with it and why the media doesn't expose it, I'll never understand.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, are they a race, or are they a religion, or do they get a religious...
The right of return. The right of return to Israel is not based on religion. It is based on race. Now, I personally don't think that the concept of race is a legitimate concept, but they do. And they want to assure that Israel is a racist apartheid society where Jews cannot, and I'm speaking in their terms, genetic Jews, cannot intermarry with other people. They want to preserve the Jewish race, and they want to dominate the world. And that's why they want to implode America. Because according to Jewish prophecy, which they have converted into Jewish racial instructions, Israel has to dominate the world, and the rest of the nations have to be subjugated by Israel and eventually destroyed. That is why America cannot remain as the superpower. Israel has to be the superpower. They will not rest until that comes about.
Oh, boy. And how are they doing?
They're progressing. You got to give them credit. They haven't given up, and they've got all the money. And they have dumbed down American society and isolated American society from the rest of the world. We used to laugh at the Soviet Union that their people were not exposed to international news and didn't know what was going on beyond their borders. But if you talk to a typical American, he doesn't know the difference on a map between Germany and France.
That's right.
So they're basically in the identical position that the Soviet people were in. They're not as poor, but we're going to get there.
Yeah, I think we are. Yeah, I think we are. Ladies and gentlemen, when we return, Chris and I are going to meander around a few other subjects and maybe take some calls even. 1-800-259-5791 if you have a call to come in for me or for Christopher. Give us a ring on the French Connection. We'll be right back. And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Darryl Bradford Smith, your host. It's down about 20 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour over here, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking to Chris from Chicago. And Chris, I want to go back to a point I made earlier about a gentleman I was talking to about, well, the wealth of of these people and how they acquired it and some of the original wealth in this community. And I was told by them that the De Medici family from Florence were the original holders of most of the money.
De Medicis were a very powerful family. They did some good things. They were patrons of the arts. They promoted wonderful architecture. But they were also a very corrupting influence, especially on the papistry. And there's good and bad to the De Medicis, but yes, they accumulated an abundance of wealth. And
well, part of their wealth is what we see today is part of this Zionist wealth, according to what I understand.
I suspect it goes back to the Roman Empire when they were melting down the gold of the Roman Empire and were accused of it and were hoarding it all. They had to make tithings to the temple. They were always great accumulators of gold. And I suspect that the priesthood that Aaron established maintained certain beliefs, and they still worship the golden calf, and it became for them a religious, as well as so many things in Judaism are, both a religious and a political commandment upon them to accumulate gold and silver from other nations.
To this day?
Oh, till tomorrow, believe me.
And they possess about what? How much?
And that's not per se a bad thing. Everyone should accumulate wealth. The bad thing is that they use it for corrupt means.
Well, if they're putting, you know, hinging all of their wealth on gold or most of it, could the world just declare gold a non-valuable item and turn their fortune into nothing?
That would do it. There would be other repercussions, but that would do it. And
they would become neutered overnight.
That's one possibility.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. There's a thought. Because here's the thing. I do have a trying to figure out this tie that goes over to Spain and the Spanish.
Well, I suspect
Moors.
The Spanish popes were probably Jews. And I suspect that Ignatius Loyola was probably a Spanish Jew. One of their goals always was to eliminate the Pope and Rome as the seat of religious monotheism, because that was the role that was supposed to be taken over by the Messiah in Jerusalem. They always resented Rome for the dispersal and for replacing Judaism as the predominant religion of the world and the Holy Roman Empire as the empire that ruled Europe. They felt that God had promised them that role. So they worked many devious means to undermine Christianity over many centuries.
Now, do you know anything about Plantagenets and their roots back to the Jewish community?
No.
Have you heard of the Plantagenet kings?
No.
Well, they're supposedly from the house of David, actually. They descended.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up sitting in the royal houses of Europe.
Oh, okay, yes. Then I know what you mean. Yes.
And is there truth to this, or is that a rumor? I mean, we read crazy books like The Da Vinci Code, which is based upon a disparate group of facts that don't really add up to a cogent story, but there are little bits of fact in there. Whereas the real story behind it, and they may have been getting out front of the real story by writing that book. There is some truth to some of these scenarios, aren't there?
Well, I haven't read the book, so I can't comment on it. But I can say, in terms of our discussion, the most significant element in Zionism has been the British, and this has been going on for over 1,000 years. The British were propagandized to believe that they were one of the lost tribes of Israel who had been brought by Phoenician sailors to the English Isles, and that it was a fulfillment of the prophecy that the Jews would be scattered on the earth to the ends of the earth. Now, when Nebuchadnezzar in 606 B.C. destroyed the Jewish kingdom and brought the Jews into captive exile in Babylonia, there are many prophetic strains that believe that this entered into the Gentile era, and that the Gentile era would last for 2,520 years, which would bring us to 1914. And the British were continually pushing the idea that the Jews must be restored to Israel in order to bring on the Messianic Age, where Christ would return and rule the earth for 1,000 years. But I think that the motivation was always to restore the Jews to Palestine so that they could take over the world, and the British were simply used as a means to accomplish that end. But if you want to look into the roots of Zionism, you have to look into the British Israel movement, and you have to look into the thousands of publications that were published in England and America advocating the idea of the restoration of the Jews from 1500 onwards.
Really?
And Queen Victoria did believe that she was descended from the House of David. And she was used by Disraeli, who was a puppet put in by Rothschild, the first Jewish prime minister of England, to tie English interests into Egypt in that region. And she was called the Viceroy of India so that the British would feel obliged to keep open a route between India and England. And the proposed route was through the Suez Canal. And the same thing had happened with Napoleon before, to try to tie France to Egypt so that the Jews could then say the best means to secure this region is to restore us to Palestine and we'll be your friends and we'll regulate all the trade back and forth. But the real motivation behind it all, I'm sure, is religious. Some Jews believe that when the Messiah is restored, they will rule the earth and the Gentile will be slaves.
Is this what percentage of the community of Jews today believe or understand these prophecies, and what percentage of them have no clue that this is going on, in your guesstimation?
Wow.
It seems like to me the people I know in the Jewish community are not aware of this.
Well, there are groups of Jews who are very aware of it. I'm sure all Orthodox Jews are aware of it, and I'm sure that the ultra-Orthodox and somewhat fanatical groups like the Kahanists, founded by Rabbi Meir Kahana, not only are aware of it, but are taking active steps to bring it about. And the danger is that it's human nature that movements like this can catch fire. If they are able to wipe out Iran's power and dominate that region, they will then have no armed resistance to destroying the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock. So they will do that. And when that happens, I suspect that the Messiah, who is sitting in the background, who is part of a dynasty that's been going on for quite some time, will come forward and be anointed as King of the Jews. And that will be a very motivating factor to make many Jews who are not religious very religious. And they have great means of propagandizing and controlling public opinion such that they could bring it about.
Well, I've been told just recently that that person is not one of the Rothschilds.
That's interesting. I'd like to look into that.
And that they have just been one of the financial controlling arms, but the real person is not that person. And so,
it's not Woody Allen, is it?
Yeah, it must be Woody. he can marry his stepchildren and stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, when we return, we have more from Christopher and your calls, if you'd like, 1-800-259-5791. Great to be back with you here on The French Connection. We're going to wind down this week's programming with this half hour that we have left with Christopher here. And, Chris, you know, let's say I'm coming to this the first time and I'm just tuning in to this show for the first time. And I want to say right now, there are many, 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 many people in the Jewish community that don't believe that Zionism is the answer for them, for their religion, for a modern world. And they are not part of this conspiracy. They're not part of these actions. And, in fact, may end up becoming victims in a blowback condition if some of this stuff comes out. So I'm careful to not include them as part of this conspiracy. This is a Zionist conspiracy, not a Jewish one. Am I right in saying that?
Absolutely, and that's the problem they always faced. That's why Zionism was never successful. There have been many false messiahs and many Zionist movements ever since the diaspora began. And the greatest resistance to it always came from Jewish people themselves. And they were always vicious. And they never polled the Jewish people and asked them if they wanted this. They never entered into any kind of democratic process to begin it. They got so desperate that they brought on the Holocaust and the persecution of the Jews of Europe to leave them no choice but to move to Israel. That's why they created the Nazi Party. That's why they had Kaganovich and Stalin persecuting Jews in Russia. You know, the Rothschilds made a deal with the Tsar of Russia in 1820 to send 10,000 Jews to Palestine against their will. It's a terrible treatment that the Zionists have done to the Jewish people. And you're starting to see the political situation in Israel fall apart because the Israeli Jews, many of them are very fine people and don't want any part of this. They would prefer to have a solution whereby Arabs and Jews coexisted in peace in a truly democratic society and benefited from one another's cultures as they've done for thousands of years. Now, the scary thing about that is if that happens, you can bet that's when the so-called Messiah will appear and take over Israeli politics. And then we enter into a very dangerous era, and we have to remember that Israel has hundreds of nuclear weapons, and we have to get those nuclear weapons out of their hands.
Well, you're right on all counts, and here's the interesting thing. Here's proof for those statements. All Jews in the world that can prove that they are Jewish have the right to immigrate to Israel and will be assisted in their settlement, including with money and help and the whole bit. But there are still 5 or 6 million Jews around the world that have said no to that, even more, 10 million. The fact is, the majority of Jews on the planet don't want to move there.
Of course not. Would you?
No, I absolutely wouldn't want to.
And if you wouldn't want to, why would you expect that they would?
That's exactly what my point. So my point is that the supposed support that the JDL claims, the ADL, the B'nai B'rith, the Organization International, whatever, all of these organizations claim to be the spokesperson for Judaism, but in fact, are they really?
Not to put too fine a point on it, but their statements are a load of crap. And they have never been true spokesmen for the Jewish community, and the rabbis have always been the strongest opponents to their false messiah dictates. They have always been dictatorial in the way they treated the Jewish people. The Jewish people have always recognized it and always considered them lowlifes. And the people that Rothschild lured to supposedly go back to Palestine were ne'er-do-wells. They were paid off to go back. That's why they never really established a viable society to this day. If we cut off all aid to Israel and shifted our allegiance instead to the Muslims, who represent a much greater percentage of the world's population and have exhibited much less warlike behavior than Jews have throughout history, we'd be in a much better position, and that would be the end of it.
Not only that, had we taken the $400 billion that we spent in Iraq and just divvied it up among the poor people of the world, we would be the most loved humans in the history of mankind.
Absolutely, and it would have been appropriate. And we do have obligations to the rest of the world. That's another terrible thing about Israel and Jewish control of the media, is that so much of the world's resources and attention are wasted on this little country of 4 or 5 million Jewish people. It's terrible at this juncture in our history, when we have many serious problems to resolve, that our attention is distracted by all of this.
Well, they've bought and paid for our government. They've bought and paid for our Congress and bought and paid for our judiciary. They've bought and paid for most of our medical organizations, our university professors and their organizations. They've bought and paid for the drug companies. And in many states, they've bought and paid for state government. We are in a very late hour in America, are we not, Christopher?
Yes, and this was organized and orchestrated by your friends Untermeyer and Brandeis, who were shyster lawyers, who were...
My friends.
Not mine either.
No.
They had terrible reputations. When Brandeis was nominated for the Supreme Court, it was the most scandalous nomination in all of Supreme Court history to this date. Ex-President Taft came out and spoke out against it, which was very unusual. The Bar Association came out against Brandeis and said he was the most dishonest person in the country.
Well, the Bar Association is part of this conspiracy, too.
It is today. It was not then. And Brandeis was put up because he was a chief Zionist. And it was a terrible scandal at the time when Brandeis was nominated. And Brandeis and Untermeyer were pretending to be reformers who would reform banker corruption. Brandeis even wrote a book about banker corruption. But what they did was destroy the Rothschilds' competition and set it up so that the Rothschilds could run the American banking system and thereby do all these things which you see manifest today. It was all by design. It was a clever design, and it worked out.
Well, it worked out because they've got the financial resources. I can make a lot of things pop and jump if I have the money.
Yes.
And these people have trillions.
Yes, and they had it for a long time. I remember reading an article from the 1870s where it was stated that the Rothschilds' wealth could not be calculated, but it was at a minimum, and this is in dollars from the 1870s, $3,400,000. $3,400,000,000.
Back in the 1870s?
Yes.
Today that would be tens and tens of trillions.
Well, plus you have all the accrued interest, all the nations that they destroyed and robbed their wealth and plundered their treasuries and... You know, all the depressions that we have are profit-making opportunities for them, and Bernard Baruch openly admitted it in his autobiography, that depressions can be orchestrated and that they're wonderful opportunities if you keep a cool head, and they're wonderful buying opportunities. You make the money selling it short, and then you use the money to buy up everything when the depression hits.
Oh, boy. And are we heading for one?
I hope not.
It looks like we are.
I think we could stave it off if we give up our allegiance to Israel and stop getting in expensive wars that only complicate the world. See, that's, well, I'll explain later if I have a chance.
Yeah, we've got another long segment coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, we got more from my friend Christopher on the French Connection today. We are plumbing all of the different parts of this, this particular problem, and, oh boy, it goes everywhere, doesn't it? Be right back. Let that one stay a little longer. I just love that. You know, I actually put that on often after the show. We've been talking to Christopher about a lot of subjects. Chris, I don't know if you're used to a format like this. I meander. I like talking about all kinds of different things. You know, there is so much about this, and I like to keep it jumping and keep people actively thinking about these subjects. So, and then each show that I bring on, I want to actually move the ball further along on all of these subjects. Because it's an education for all of us, and you know, there's so many people waking up to these facts, including the person that just called in here, Mike from Arizona. You're with me on the air with Chris.
Yeah, hi, Daryl. Chris.
Hi.
Hi.
Enjoying listening to your conversation here while I was working. Just to kind of add a footnote to what you're talking about, Bernard Baruch. Yeah, Baruch, people will remember, was in charge of the. War Industries Board, as I recall, in World War One, and so basically he was assigning what companies would make a small fortune out of the war, and on the board were people like Joe Kennedy, and in 1919, after the war was over, Baruch was quoted as saying, "Well, we've made you all millionaires. Now we'll get the next war started and make you all billionaires." So this is the attitude that these people had about 116,000 roughly lives that were lost in World War One, American lives in World War One.
Well, and you know, these same people's design has killed over 100 million. And I do the math by talking about the Armenian slaughter and the Russian slaughter in the steppes in Georgia and Azerbaijan and this area, and also the world wars, both of them. I mean, we can even, how about the purges in communist China were also orchestrated by these people. We're talking about mass murder on a scale that most humans can't even wrap their brain around. Am I right, Chris?
Yes, and that was another very important issue that I wanted to address. And that is why I believe that the next world war is coming, because in Isaiah chapter 2, verses 1 through 4, it predicts a war that will be the war to end all wars. Now, that phrase was used by Jacob Schiff, I believe, in 1915 in a New York Times interview.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, World War I was not the war to end all wars, nor was World War II. Now, Jewish leadership has for centuries promulgated a model that they use in their attempt to establish a world government. And that model is causing wars in order to make Gentiles weary of war and clamor for peace. And then they put forward the sophistical notion, knowing that they themselves are the cause of the wars, that the only means to obtain peace is to have a world government and eliminate the nations. Because if you have no more nations, you have no more nations to go to war. And this is the method that they have used for centuries to try to propagandize Gentiles into giving up national sovereignty.
And Chris, when you speak about unfulfilled prophecy like Isaiah, which I know you've lost Daryl because he's I don't think he's much of a Christian, if any, anymore. And I happen to be a preterist. I believe that all prophecy was fulfilled. I believe that all prophecy was fulfilled in Christ. The whole purpose of the Old Testament prophecies and its fulfillment was in Jesus Christ, the Messiah. You know, to say that there's still unfulfilled prophecies is to say that Jesus didn't complete his mission, and I don't think that's where I want to be. So basically, you fall into their lap and play into their hands when you start talking about that.
Personally, I'm not in either camp. I'm trying to anticipate the way that they view the world based upon what they conceive of as their instructions from God, and why these events unfold the way that they do, and the methods that they use to justify what they do to themselves, which are in due to others, which are very immoral acts. And there was a famous man, Henri de Saint-Simon,
mm-hmm.
who created this socialistic, positivistic attitude that we need a one-world government, that all religion has to be replaced by science, which would deprive you of your right to be a Christian, which is taking place today, I'm sure you're aware. And also that a Jewish leadership would take over and rule the world and regulate everything for everyone. Now this is very thinly veiled Jewish prophecy, that the nations must be destroyed through war, that the final war will end all wars, and that we will beat their swords into plowshares, is the phrase that Isaiah uses. And I think that they don't think that that has happened yet. And I understand very much what you're saying, and you have the proper Christian perspective. From their perspective, they can't accept the idea that Christ was the Messiah because he didn't accomplish these things. He didn't wield a iron scepter, and he didn't crush the nations, and he didn't make Israel the kingdom of the earth. And I understand that that happened because the Jews had broken the covenant and had lost faith in God,
right,
et cetera, et cetera. And perhaps you can elaborate on that.
Well, sure. Stick around, guys. We're going to finish out this show with both of you. Ladies and gentlemen, Christopher and Michael and myself will be back. I'm Daryl Bradford Smith, and this is The French Connection. Stick with me.
Scotch and soda, but in your eye, baby, do I feel high.
And we're back for this last segment of the last show of the week. Ladies and gentlemen, it's I need a rest. Chris, Mike, I need a rest. I'm so tired, I can't even, I'm babbling half the time. Look, we've got to close out this show somehow, and I understand prophecy and all the other stuff. I've got to say, I want to give both of you a chance to say to my public here, what are we doing in the short and medium term here? Because this is what we're dealing with. Short term and medium term, I see some rather challenging moments ahead for America. I really, really do. And I think they're going to be financial in nature very short term.
Well, I think that the Christian community can be our savior in this because they know what's happening. They know the history behind it. And I think many of them have a false, been led into a false understanding of what their own religion tells them. And Mike can probably elaborate on that much better than I. But they, I think, are the potential motive force to put an end to this.
What do you think, Mike?
Well, you know, I used to read some of Hitler's writings, and I used to wonder why Hitler referred to Freemasonry as Jewish Freemasonry. And I eventually, I'm slow, but I figured it out. The Jewish leadership has controlled Freemasonry for at least 200 years, if not many, many more centuries. And essentially, and there are some great quotes out there that the whole purpose of Freemasonry is to glorify the Jewish race. This is from some rabbi back in the 19th century, and there are many similar quotes to that. All the symbols and rites and rituals of Freemasonry are borrowed from Judaism, and basically they serve the purposes of the Jews, whether they realize it or not. And there are many Freemasons who've infiltrated the Christian Church. Many of them are in the pulpits, and they are leading them astray with this silly dispensationalist theology, which basically completely nullifies the completed work of Christ. It says that Israel has to be regathered, the temple rebuilt, and if anything is more preposterous than that, the very temple that Christ and that God himself destroyed, you know, they want to rebuild it, reinstitute animal sacrifice when the perfect sacrifice was already made. It's just too silly to even seriously entertain. But like I said, these Freemasons have led their flocks astray, and I think they'll
who would you group in that category? Falwell, Robertson?
Yeah, most notably those are a couple of big ones. Hagee, Copeland, you know, almost all the big televangelists.
Is there anyone on the right side of the issue other than Ted Pike?
Billy Graham, another one. He's a dispensationalist, 33rd degree Mason.
But who's not doing that?
Oh, there are a lot of good pastors out there.
Well, give me a big name who's not doing it.
I can't think of any big names.
That's a bad sign.
Because you won't hear about them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll help. We'll get the word out. If you tell people, I'll tell people. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, if we tell everybody, everybody will know, and they'll come listen to the French Connection, and they'll hear the truth. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Chris. Chris, I appreciate you coming on today, my friend.
You're quite welcome. Anytime.
You bet. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back next Monday for lots more stuff. Stick with us. French Connection is always going to inform. Next week.